beloved, are a remarkable woman. I have faith that you will be able to help the healers through the coming trials. Sally will return when it is time. I will handle our pack, while you handle your girls.
I hate it when you're reasonable, she huffed as she headed off. But she loved that he called it their pack, because pack meant family, and though she would only ever admit it to Lucien, she'd always wanted to be part of a family.
I'm your family, always, he told her through their bond. Always is a long time, my love. Not long enough to be with you.
Any other man could have said that, and Perry would have laughed at how ridiculous it sounded. But coming from her mate, who chose his words so carefully and only spoke what he truly meant, it was powerful. Sally couldn't believe Jen was here, and seeing her longtime best friend was making her incredibly homesick. She loved working with Perry and getting to know the new healers, but she missed her friends. She missed working in the bar with Causton. She missed fireside chats with hot chocolate and Oreos. She was snapped from her pity party when Perry came stomping into her room after having told them to meet her up there.
"How did you get here?"
Perry asked as she shut the door to her room, blocking out the noise from downstairs. Jen's brow drew together.
Sin brought me.
"Oh, how is she?"
Sally asked at the mention of the Fey warrior.
"Well, when she dropped me off, she seemed irritated."
Jen's lips twitched.
"Well, as irritated as Sin can seem. Anywho, you know she and Thalion have been trying out the whole elf-fey love connection. I think the honeymoon phase is over."
"Sin flashed you here? Did she have to try more than once?" Perry interrupted.
"Yes and no," Jen drew out. "Is that a problem?"
"Well, other than the obvious, yes, it's a problem. I wasn't able to flash at all in my realm, or out of it, about an hour ago."
Perry stopped talking and suddenly disappeared and then reappeared on the other side of the room. Her eyes narrowed.
Why would he only temporarily shut the veil down?
She wondered out loud.
"Still hunting Vulcan?"
Jen looked at Sally. She nodded.
"He's powerful, Jen."
"The exact reason we need her here,"
Perry said, apparently done thinking about the implications of why she could flash again. Sally was surprised to see Jen's face soften.
"Jackie and I, of all people, know just how needed Sally is. I get it, Perry. She balances out your crazy with her reasonableness. But as much as you think you need her, Jackie needs her more. She's going to go into labor any day now."
"Rachel is there,"
Perry interrupted, but Jen held up a hand, stopping her.
"Rachel did not grow up with Jackie since kindergarten. Rachel hasn't sat in Jackie's room listening to Aerosmith songs while lamenting on how crappy the high school male population is. Rachel..."
"I get it,"
Perry relented.
"And, for the record, I don't want you to miss the birth of Jackie's baby. Hell, I don't want to miss it, but there's no guarantee that I will be in a position to stop in."
Sally saw it then, just as she had earlier during the meeting. The bone-weary tiredness that cloaked their fey friend. Sally reached out her hand and took Perry's and pushed some of her own power into her. Perry smiled and pulled Sally into a hug.
"You waste your energy on me, healer. Save it for those who deserve it."
Sally stepped back and looked at the high fey.
"There are few as deserving as you, Perry. You and I both know it."
Sally and Perry had their own history, one in which they'd both been willing to sacrifice their life for the other. It had formed a bond between them, and Sally was pretty sure Perry didn't know how to handle having just a normal friendship built from walking through fire with each other.
"Go get your mate," Perry told her. "I'll take you all back myself."
10 minutes later, they were standing in the foyer of the Romanian Pack Mansion.
"Aren't you going to say hi to Jackie?"
Jen asked Perry as the Fae stepped back from the girls.
"Not tonight,"
Perry said in an uncharacteristically gentle voice.
"This is a joyous time for her. She needs people around her with that kind of energy. I'm just not one of those people right now."
Sally gave Perry one last hug.
"We're going to defeat him, Perry. Anna and Jewel will be fine. It all feels like the crap has hit the fan, but it's not over."
Jen stood staring at the spot where Perry had been moments ago.
Is she okay? You know how she is, spouts off at the mouth and comes across like she doesn't care when in reality she cares so much that it kills her when she feels like she fails someone. Jen finished for her. Exactly. She isn't fine right now, Sally admitted. But she will be, and she doesn't have to do this on her own. She's got Lucien. He's good for her.
Perry appeared in the bedroom she and Lucien shared and shook her head at him. He could see the frustration in her light green eyes.
Pixie Realm is still shut down tight. I even tried calling since Sally's phone was working here, but nothing happened.
Why didn't he keep Ferry closed as well?
Lucien asked more to himself than her.
Maybe he isn't powerful enough to keep them both locked, she offered. Or he just did it so we would rack our brains about it until we developed a complex.
She was tired. His mate, powerful, beautiful, and strong. But some days she needed reminding that it was okay not to be the one to have all the answers.
Come here, Perizada,
he crooned as he held out his hand to her. She shot him a glare. He knew the command would irritate her, but he also knew that she liked that he was more dominant than her. It gave her the freedom to fall apart and know that he was strong enough to hold her together. He waited patiently, his hand still extended, and finally his headstrong mate placed her much smaller hand in his and let him draw her into the shelter of his arms.
"We've been here before," Lucien told her. "There are many battles. Some we will win and some we won't. What matters is that we keep fighting."
She pressed her face into his chest, and he felt her tears begin to moisten his shirt. It broke his heart to see her cry, but Lucien knew how important it was to let those tears fall. Grieving was part of the process of healing and growing stronger. You didn't necessarily have to be grieving a death. Grieving could come in many forms, and tonight his mate was grieving. Jewel and Anna had left the safety of the Fey Realm, and she didn't know if they were safe. They had a group in the Pixie Realm that they couldn't communicate with, and they had no idea if the traitor Cecil had done something to hurt them after he'd lied to Anna. And Sally, someone that Lucien didn't think Perry realized how much she'd come to rely on, was going to be away while her best friend had her first baby, which happened to be only the second child born to a mated couple in 18 years. All of this weighed heavily on her mind, and Lucien could tell that it was wearing her body out as well. She needed to grieve her frustrations and perceived failures. She needed to cry out her frustrations with no other eyes watching or ears hearing.
"I love you, Perizada,"
Lucien whispered against her hair as he held her close. Her tears continued to fall, and it wasn't until late in the night that she was collected enough to pull back and look up at him.
"I don't know how you love me, Lucien, but I am so, so thankful that you do."
Perry pressed a soft kiss to his lips and then looked up at him again. He ran a thumb across her lips, down her chin and her throat, causing her to tremble slightly.
"Loving you is my privilege. There is no how to it. It is simply my choice. I choose to love you, Perizada."
Lucien fisted his hand in her long, shimmering white hair and tugged just hard enough that she gasped. He leaned down and pressed a kiss to her lips and then trailed kisses down her jawline and neck until he reached the flesh that bore his bite. Perry shivered when his teeth scraped over the mark.
"And now I'm going to show you that I love you. Pay very close attention. It's going to be a very thorough lesson."
Lucien growled as his teeth sunk into her flesh, and once his wolf was satisfied that their mark was deep in her flesh, he reverently stripped the clothes from her body and taught her all about his love. Gustavo shook with emotion as he stood with his shoulder pressed against a tree, staring off into the forest in the Pixie Realm. She'd heard him. When he'd decided to attempt to speak to her through the mate bond, he hadn't been sure that she would hear him because of the distance growing between their physical bodies. And then, even if she did hear him, Gustavo had no guarantee that Anna would even acknowledge him. But she'd heard him, and she'd responded. Her voice in his mind had been the sweetest symphony. In his long life, the Spanish Alpha had never heard a sweeter sound. There had been so many things he wanted to ask her, but he'd forced himself to refrain. He was trying very hard to keep from scaring her any more than she already seemed to be. What he found curious, if not a bit frustrating, was that whatever situation she was in, she didn't seem afraid. Gustavo had no idea why she'd left the pixie realm. He didn't know if she'd been taken against her will, or tricked, or simply found a way out and decided to go. Whatever the reason, the impression he got from her while talking through their bond was more of confusion and uncertainty than of fear. His wolf had wanted to demand that she tell them where they were, but Gustavo forced the beast to see reason. Anna would not think that they had a right to demand anything. She didn't know them. She didn't understand the way true mates worked. Yet, his wolf practically purred. Gustavo's beast was a relentless hunter, and now that they'd found their mate, he'd just been given the scent of the most precious hunt of his life. He would move slowly. His steps would be measured and careful, because he couldn't afford to screw this up. Gustavo had been waiting for his mate for nearly 3 centuries. The darkness in him was strong. He closed his eyes and turned his face up toward the moon. He could almost feel the favor of his creator shining down on him. He'd held out this long. He'd not given in to the darkness that threatened to devour any humanity in him. Soon, her light would chase that darkness away, and Gustavo wouldn't have to feel the constant struggle his wolf continually fought. Anna would bring him balance and peace.
"Sleep well, mi amor."
He slipped the words into her resting mind. What he didn't add was that she was going to need her rest because his wolf was ready for a hunt, and she was his ultimate prey. Chapter 15. She is coming. She guards her heart and does not love freely. She is lonely, but she doesn't trust enough not to be alone. She stands and fights because no one has ever fought for her. She is broken. She is bruised. She is yours. The Great Luna. "Are you scared?" Kara asked Heather and Stella as they sat around the fire of their camp that had become their home away from home.
"This constant gnawing pain in my chest is more irritating than frightening," Heather said as she pressed her hand against her heart.
"I am," Stella admitted. "I'd almost rather face Vulcan on my own than meet my wolf."
Kara could see the nightmares that lived in Stella's eyes. She was familiar with those nightmares because similar ones lived in her own.
"They're not all bad," Heather said with a small smile. "Some are even almost worthy of us."
This made Stella smile, which Kara knew was the blind healer's goal, even if the other girl couldn't see it.
"What about you, Kara?"
Stella asked as she picked up a stick and started tracing letters in the dirt.
"Are you scared to be mated to a werewolf?"
"When you say it like that, all willy-nilly, it sounds so ridiculous," Kara laughed.
"I'm a blind C&I dog trainer. Care Bear, there is nothing more ridiculous than that. Mated to a werewolf has got nothing on me."
Stella clucked her tongue.
"You can't expect us to hold the measuring stick of ridiculousness up against you. That's like asking comic strip lovers to rate all comic strips against Calvin and Hobbes."
Heather frowned.
"I can't decide if I should be insulted or not."
"You just said you were a blind seeing eye dog trainer. Do insults really matter at this point?"
Kara was laughing as she usually did when Stella and Heather got started.
"The point isn't me at all, striptease," Heather snapped. "You were asking Kara if she was scared." "Dang, girl, back up off a sister."
"I'm not as scared as I thought I would be,"
Kara jumped in before Stella could throw something back at Heather.
"What do you mean?"
Heather asked. Kara shrugged. "We've all gotten to see these mated relationships in action. Perry and Lucian, Sally and Costin, Adam," she motioned to the sleeping couple 20 feet away, "and Krina. These men love and respect their mates. Are they a little bossy? Yes. Do they tend to throw hissy fits? Yes. But I've never seen any of them act like the guys I've known all my life. Before I came here and met all of them, I was convinced that there wasn't a decent man walking on Earth. I was convinced that under the right circumstances, with the right motivation, they could all be worthless pricks."
"Come on now," Heather cajoled.
Don't hold back on our account. Kara smiled. I wouldn't dare, Helen.
Stella understood what the younger girl was saying, and she agreed, but something in her mind still wanted to whisper that even these men could be brought to their knees before evil if it offered just the right morsel. It sickened her to think that one of these poor wolves would be stuck with her as their mate.
Keep that mentality, Stella told Kara. Don't let yourself become jaded.
You aren't jaded, Stella.
Heather reached over and patted her leg.
You're just a little worse for wear. Nothing that some TWC can't fix.
TWC?
Stella smirked.
Tender wolf care, not to be confused with TBWC, tender blind woman care. The two are easily confused, so it's completely understandable if you get them mixed up.
I don't think I want to know just how tender wolf care could be confused with tender blind woman care,
Stella said as she wiped the tears from her laughter away. Heather shook her head and made a flicking motion with her hand.
It's something to do with the tongue-bathing portion of the care.
Okay, stop.
Stella nearly rolled off the stump she'd been sitting on because she was laughing so hard. Kara had given up and was laying on her side on the ground, holding her stomach as she laughed. For those few minutes as the laughter consumed them, Stella was able to forget the pain that was growing in her and the fear that seemed to be joining it. She was able to enjoy something she'd never had before, friendship. If she had to have a mate, if that was the price for all of this, then, though she was terrified, she'd decided it was worth it. Having met Heather, Kara, and the others, and having their esteem and love was more than Stella could have ever hoped for. And for them, for their friendship, she would figure out how to deal with the crippling fear of having a man's undivided attention on her. As the laughter died down, she took a deep breath and tried to push away the feeling that their time in the pixie realm was coming to an end. And, once they left, things were going to be changing again. She didn't want to think about what those changes could be. Stella straightened herself back on the stump and smiled at the still chuckling Heather.
You okay, Helen?
She asked, using the nickname Perry had given her. Heather heard the smile in Stella's voice, and she had never wanted to see so badly. She wanted to see the utterly battered Stella, who always sounded a little jaded and a little in pain, smiling. She could tell, just from her friend's personality, that her smile was one of those that would make others stop and notice.
I'm all right, Heather confirmed.
Are you ever scared?
Stella asked, suddenly serious.
What do you mean?
It's just... She paused. You live in the dark. Doesn't that ever terrify you or paralyze you into not moving?
Heather understood the double meaning, even if Stella didn't fully understand why she was asking her.
I guess if I understood what the absence of light looked like, then maybe I'd be more adequately scared. But sometimes you seeing people forget. I have no frame of reference. You say green tree and I say yellow dipstick. It's all Greek to me.
Heather knew it would make them laugh again, but that didn't make her words any less true. Asking if she was afraid of the dark was actually a pretty common question. But, like Heather couldn't imagine what it was like to live with sight, the seeing couldn't fathom what it was like to live without it.
Maybe that's why I'm not scared of the whole werewolf mate thing, Heather offered, because I don't have a point of reference in which to draw that fear from.
She wasn't lying, not exactly anyway. Heather wasn't scared of being mated to a werewolf. That wasn't where her fears or insecurities lie. Her fear was what the male would think when they realized that their mate was blind. Call her stupid, but in Heather's mind, the animal kingdom was all about survival of the fittest. She would be considered a weakling, one not worthy of surviving because of her lack of sight. The only thing that really scared her about finding this mate they'd been promised was the possibility that he would find her lacking. She steered the conversation in a lighter direction, not wanting to dwell on what she couldn't change anyway. The only reason they'd even brought up the mate bonding was because each of them had begun to have sharp pains that would rob them of their breath. For some reason, that night, the pain had gotten to the point where they couldn't hide it anymore, not from each other at least. But Heather was done with all the seriousness. She was worried about Anna and Jewel and unsure about what her future in the supernatural world looked like, and she just didn't want to dredge it all back up. So instead, she came up with silly things, lighthearted things that she hoped would give them all a little respite from their inner turmoil. Heather flinched as she saw a bright light behind her eyes and felt a moment's emotion of worry and determination that didn't belong to her. She was feeling him again, experiencing his feelings. She pushed away any thought of him and focused on her two friends. While Adam and Krina slept and Gustavo brooded, she, Stella, and Kara acted like the teenagers they'd never been allowed to be. It was one of the best nights Heather could ever remember. Kale felt her alarm, though he didn't fully understand why, so he pulled back as much as his wolf would let him, giving her space. She wasn't ready to hear his voice, not yet. He laid out in his wolf form under the stars of Faerie, basking in the moon's glory. His wolf had finally settled enough to let him have the hope of actual rest, now that they knew Perry was no longer going to try and keep the wolves apart from their true mates. So he closed his eyes and allowed himself to dream of the days to come when he would finally get to meet her, talk to her, and hopefully hold her. Ciro knew he was dreaming when he opened his eyes and saw the great Luna standing before him.
"Creator,"
he bowed his head reverently. "Hello, old one," she said gently. He heard the wry smile on her lips and smiled himself. Their creator had a sense of humor. She called him Old One because it was true. Ciro was indeed old, one of the oldest werewolves alive, but he didn't look a day over 25. All wolves aged very slow, but he aged even slower. He'd never questioned it, why his creator let him live so long without a true mate. He never questioned how he had managed to stave off the darkness.
"Because it was my will," she answered his unasked questions. "She has been through much, and I knew she would need someone willing to be patient. You, Ciro of the Italy Pack, have learned patience in your long life. I knew she would need someone strong enough to bear her pain, but gentle enough not to frighten her with that strength. She needs to be loved through actions and not words. I have kept you young beyond your time, so you would be wise enough. I have kept you from surrendering to the darkness inside of you, because you will need to help her fight the darkness inside of her. Be patient with her, Ciro, and remind her often that she is safe with you."
"You have my word that I will do all that you say for her," Ciro vowed.
The dream faded away, and Ciro was left with his own thoughts. After centuries of nothing other than leading his pack, he was finally going to get to start living. Nick knew that even though Kara would soon be back in Faerie, he still couldn't claim her. He could only be what she needed him to be, and for now that meant being her friend. But it would be enough. Just to have her close by where he could protect her, talk to her, and know without a shadow of a doubt that she was safe, would be more than enough. Most everyone else was asleep as he sat in the living room of Perry's home, staring out the window. He hadn't moved from the spot he'd been sitting at since their meeting, where he'd shared his ideas on what their strategy should be after others had failed. It was almost as if his wolf had planted his butt in the seat and was refusing to move until Kara walked through the front door. But he was pretty sure the man would refuse just as adamantly. He was surprised when someone sat in the seat across from him and began staring out the window with him.
"I thought things would be more interesting than this," Thadric said in that cool, sophisticated tone.
It made Nick want to slap some chaps on the djinn and put him on the back of a motorcycle, because no one could act sophisticated on the back of a motorcycle with the wind blowing in their face.
"People are sleeping," Nick pointed out. "Things usually aren't interesting when people are asleep."
Thadric heaved a sigh that made it clear he didn't think Nick's excuse was a good enough one to explain why no one was entertaining him.
"Do djinn sleep?"
Nick asked, deciding that if he was going to be rude enough to sit and invade his territory while Nick wanted to be thinking about Kara, then Nick would ignore basic species etiquette 101. Thadric shot Nick an annoyed glance.
"Sometimes."
Why aren't you sleeping now?
Because I want to talk.
Nick almost laughed at the near pout coming from the ancient djinn.
Okay, was Nick's only response.
And later he would realize why saying okay to Thadric in any context was not a good idea.
I think I want a mate.
Thadric's declaration reverberated off of the empty walls. Nick's heart kicked into overdrive as he stood suddenly and headed for the stairs.
I just remembered that I'm really tired,
he called out over his shoulder as he took Perry's stairs two at a time, not bothering to look back at Thadric and see if he'd confused or offended him, or both. Nick figured since he was pining after a 17-year-old, he wasn't exactly the best person for Thadric to hit up when it came to dating. Thadric would just have to wait for the next poor sucker to come along and sit in the chair across from him.
Good luck with that,
Nick muttered under his breath as he settled down to sleep. His last thought as he drifted off was that he couldn't wait for Kara to get back, so he could tell her about Thadric, the ancient djinn, and his declaration that he thinks he wants a mate. Dalton refused to answer his alpha.
Damn it, Dalton, do we really have to go through this again?
Dylan growled at him.
You aren't an alpha, and you aren't a lone wolf. You aren't going to hunt on your own. She's my mate, and she's missing,
Dalton argued, tired of hearing his alpha say the same thing over and over again.
You know I have every right to go after her, pack or no pack.
And what if she doesn't want to be found? What then? Dylan taunted. Dalton knew it was a valid question, but it still ticked him off.
My looking for her is not dependent on whether or not she wants to be found. She is my mate, and she is gone. Therefore, I will look for her to make sure she is safe. There's nothing difficult about it.
Don't be a dick, Dylan snarled.
Then you don't be an insufferable ass, Dalton roared back. Why are you fighting me on this? If it was Tanya out there, you'd be gone before anyone could even call your name. Why are you expecting different behavior from me?
His alpha let out a resigned sigh before giving a small huff of laughter.
I would think it would be obvious. I'm your alpha. It's my job to protect you. That's what I'm doing. I just don't want you to hunt her down only to be faced with the reality of what she has become. I know what she's become,
Dalton pressed.
What?
Dylan asked.
What has she become? Say it. Say it so I know that you understand what you might find if you hunt her.
Dalton didn't want to say it. He didn't want to use his little dove's name in the same sentence with the likes of Vulcan's sick creations. He didn't want to give her the same title that Gwen had carried when he'd ended her life. He couldn't.
That's what I was afraid of, Dylan said wearily. You can't say it. You can't hunt her. Then what am I supposed to do? You have to wait and let her come back to you.
Dalton shook his head and closed his eyes, his heart shattering once again.
I just can't leave her out there with Vulcan calling the shots. I can't abandon her.
You aren't abandoning her, Dalton. She left you. It's up to her to come back.
Dalton didn't respond to Dylan. There was nothing more to say. After 15 minutes of tense silence, Dylan bid him goodnight and headed back for Perry's home. Dalton continued to stare off into the distance as he let his mind pull up an image of Jewel's face. He understood what Dylan was saying, and knew that he might not like what he found once he did finally find Jewel. But Dalton knew that something far worse would happen if he didn't go. He found himself wishing that he could talk to her through a mate bond. He wanted to reassure her that it wouldn't matter what he found once he located her again. He would still want her, and nothing was going to change that.
Be brave, little dove,
he found himself whispering into the night wind, even as he whispered it to himself. Epilogue. Your doubts and fears give the darkness strength, my mother once told me. So I took that to mean that all you have to do to survive the darkness is don't doubt a thing and fear nothing and no one. The score? Darkness 175, Anna 4. Anna.
It almost felt too easy, Vulcan thought,
as he stared at the two sleeping gypsy healers. They thought they were safe in the hotel room. as if a lock or holding hands could somehow keep him out. Before long, they wouldn't be trying to keep him locked out. They would want him with them. They would want to be in his presence so they could soak up his power. It was a little tidbit that he'd failed to mention to Jewel when he'd offered her his blood. He explained that she would have to do as the magic commanded her, that she wouldn't be able to help herself. But Vulcan didn't mention that the more she used this magic, the stronger the craving for it would grow. With every new witch Jewel and Anna made for him, the craving to make another would grow threefold. It would take more and more witches being made to satiate the urges inside of them. And with every witch turned, the darkness would gain more ground. He leaned down and pressed a kiss to Jewel's forehead and caressed Anna's hair as if they were precious children to him.
"Sleep tight, my little lovelies," Vulcan crooned. "Tomorrow you will show me and the world just what a gypsy healer turned witch is capable of."
This concludes Jewel of Darkness by Quinn Loftus, narrated by Terry Schnaubelt. Copyright 2015 by Quinn Loftus Books, LLC. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Quinn Loftus Books, LLC, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.